Radio's coverage of AusCert's 2008 conference is sponsored by Microsoft. Visit itradio.com.au/AusCert08 for IT Radio's full coverage of this year's event and to hear Microsoft's AusCert presentations. Or go to itradio.com.au/security for the Risky Business podcast, honing your eardrums since February 2007.
Hello and welcome to this special interview with AT&T staffer and security legend Bill Cheswick. I'm Patrick Gray. Cheswick worked on early firewalls and honeypots at Bell Labs in the 1980s and has since done a bunch of interesting stuff, including the Internet Mapping Project. Have you ever heard of a network being described as crunchy on the outside and gooey on the inside? Well, that came from a Usenix paper Cheswick wrote in the early 90s. So let's get started, Bill. And you were just saying earlier that Brian Snow is an absolute champion. And
yes.
We've actually podcasted his talk. And would you recommend that our listeners listen to that?
Absolutely. Anything Brian Snow wants to say, you should listen to.
Yeah.
If you're in security, I don't know about the rest of the world.
Well, he's arguably one of the most influential guys in security for a long, long time.
Well,
he was behind the little secret wall because he was the technical director of the
NSA. He was chief scientist at the NSA,
yeah.
You want to find these cold warriors as they come into retirement and come out from behind the darkness,
yeah,
because they emerge with wonderful stories they can tell. Many they can't, but they can tell. And security lessons that are absolutely right, rock solid on.
Yeah, yeah. But don't you think sometimes, with some of these old guard guys, and I suppose you could be considered an old guard guy.
I'm older than I look.
Because, I mean, you've been doing security stuff for something like 30 years. I mean,
Actually, I logged into my first computer, gosh, it's May, almost 40 years ago, within a couple months. It's new kids. We weren't even zygotes then, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you've been doing this stuff a while, I think is my point. But, there is a tendency for some of the older guys to say, we've known how to do this, right, since 1982.
And nobody's doing it.
Yeah, okay.
We didn't do it, or when we did, those systems are gone.
Yeah.
And nobody runs Multics.
Yeah, so it's just, we've missed that boat for now.
Well, it's just discouraging that a lot of the defensive moves that have been obvious for decades are just not getting done. We're seeing the same mistakes over and over again. To give you an example, a lot of the Unix vendors, Sun, SGI, and so on, when they first came out with their workstations in the early 90s, had all their network surfaces turned on. Doors wide open, come screw me.
Finger me.
That's right. And they learned to release these things with those services closed.
Mm.
Okay, now it's mid-1990s, and Microsoft is starting to come out with network services.
Mm.
Do they turn any of them off? Do they pay any attention? I don't even think they noticed. Mm. They just, we'll just turn on stuff. We just want to get it to work and get it out there. Now, if you look at their stock price and you're a shareholder, they did the right thing.
Yeah.
But from a security point of view, it's, look, we just got finished telling these other guys, pointing out to them how wrong it is, and now...
I don't know, man. This whole thing about firewalling and turning off services and stuff has had one unintended effect, I think, which is to create the most massively bloated web services and make web servers so extraordinarily complicated. Everyone's pumping stuff around in XML and doing everything through web because it gets through firewalls.
Is that why they're doing it? I mean, I'm still a guy who uses a text editor and edits my own HTML for my web page.
Okay. That's not most people, though.
No, they're doing Ajax.
And I've seen your web page, and I can tell that you do it in Notepad.
Well, of course you can. And a lot of those pages were done in 1995, too.
Okay,
I haven't
cool.
gone back to clean them up. And I'm not sure I should now. They're becoming historical objects.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But really, they're doing all of this stuff just so they can get through port 80? Is this what you're asserting? I'm not convinced I buy that.
I'm asking.
I don't think that's the case. I think this is how they engineer providing content to the world. You have database, Ajax, JavaScript, and this is how we like to present things to people, and PHP, and oh, by the way, we don't care so much if it's insecure because, everyone gets it when it's insecure.
Yeah, yeah, so it's everyone's problem.
Well, yeah. I have friends in the security business who run PHP. PHP has inherent problems, and it has problems that are easy to make if you'd make mistakes in addition.
PHP file include vulnerabilities are like all the rage at the moment.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, the whole thing, why wasn't that designed with security in mind from the first place? It's pretty new language.
Now, look, I just want to go back to Microsoft's opening keynote by Scott Czerny. What did you think of that keynote?
Oh, it was good. It's always interested to hear what Scott has. My question for him afterwards was, would his life be easier if he had the same job at Apple?
Well, when yeah, I mean, it's what the market share proposition.
Well, no, not well the market share, and you know he's playing defense and trying to improve things. Mm. Would it be an easier job at Apple? Not ignoring the market share issue, and I'm not sure it would be any easier at Apple. You know, they're not a target because of market share, though they're getting there. They're 6.6% of the American PC market now.
Yeah, and they were 4% a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I think they've got another doubling coming.
Yeah,
those commercials are compelling. They're very nice machines to use. And they cost more, but your maintenance costs are much less. You know what happens, and I'm sure this happens with you and your listeners. It's Saturday. You drive an hour and a half to grandma's house. You sit in the chair and you chat with her for an hour. You catch up about the kids and the dog and the school and so on. And then she says, oh, and I'm having a little problem with my computer. And then you go back and you spend 4 hours cleaning the viruses off grandma's computer. And then you do this all over again 3 months later.
Yeah.
It's a denial. It is tempting. It's a free time attack.
I have thought. It's like it's tempting just to grab a MacBook and give it to Mom.
Or something. You know, some Linux thing that's just configured so Mom can't change it.
The EPC?
Yeah, you know, there are lots of possible solutions to this. Mm. All she wants is web, email, and maybe instant messaging mostly. And you can do that in lots of different ways. And this is something that Microsoft ought to do. How about a Windows OK? It's, you know, it's stripped down. It's not a jillion lines. It's a jillion divided by 100 lines.
Yeah.
And it just provides what grandma needs. And there's nothing she can do to click that will do harm to her.
I think Google's working on something like this.
Well, that's right. There are a bunch of approaches along this line. And, you know, Apple sort of is like that right now because people aren't really attacking them.
Mm.
And maybe it's more secure. I don't know. You know, Apple has a lot of open source software in there, a lot of old servers that are open source that they haven't upgraded.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, those first remote roots in OS X were found in the MDNS responder.
Yeah.
funny story, actually. I know a guy who worked with the team who found those bugs,
mm-hmm.
and they'd originally started looking at them for the CanSec Pwn to Own contest, and they'd been pulling apart the binaries and looking at them, and then someone came into the room and said, you guys know that code's open source, right? And they went, oh, God damn it. So they've been doing the whole thing in a hex.
It's old open source. Apple's not keeping up to date, so if you want to know about bugs in Apple, just look at old bugs in the open source stuff.
Yeah, Darwin, right? It's Unix.
Well, it's Unix, but specifically the servers are older versions of things. You know, I don't know the specifics. It's one of the things, been in the business this long, I don't care about the specifics.
Yeah, Now, speaking of cutting down on code, we had a conversation earlier about trimming down operating systems to only use what you require in the context of using virtualized desktops. So instead of loading up a massive bloaty operating system and then putting, you know, Word on top of that, why not just have the 5 to 10% of the operating system you require to run those components, put them in a virtual image, and then, you know, have some tools around your hypervisor which make it like, you know, that's how you can alt-tab between images and, you know, you can access your file system that way and stuff like that. Do you think this is going to fundamentally change the desktop security model?
I think it might. I think it's promising. I want to see a lot of people working on this sort of thing. Belt and suspenders, very important, because basically the software we want to run, these browsers and mail readers, are just plain too dangerous, and I don't know how to make them safe.
Mm.
So I want to put them in sandboxes, jails, chroot environments, and virtual machines, so that if you get out of one of them, you still can't leak out of the whole container.
Yeah, now browsers are bad news. I mean, that's been the problem for the last, I don't know, couple of years.
It's not going away.
No.
We want functionality in our browsers. We want them to play movies and do all this other stuff. And frankly, that stuff is just going to be unsafe. I think we've lost it. We have to find out ways to run unsafe software in safe containers. And we can do this. We have containment for biological things.
Yeah.
And you know, what you suggested was not a bad idea. It reminds me, you know, gets back to old fart stuff. 20 years ago, Plan 9 was building namespaces. You just bind in the pieces of the operating system that you want to use for this particular server or user or what have you. And you just simply had no functionality to the rest of the operating system because there was no way to talk to it.
Well, a lot of these browser bugs, they wind up accessing some really obscure functionality, which is, you know, some function written to synchronize your clock to some specific religion, Mayan tradition, where it skips forward 30 seconds on the first Tuesday when the bells ring and the moon's at, you know, 30 degrees and stuff like that, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the OS that we could just really throw out.
Well, I like that. there were people, you know, I had the privilege of working at Bell Labs, and one fellow put in at the end of the year, his accomplishments was that he removed 3,000 lines of code from the kernel. Mm-hmm. That is a substantial accomplishment. I don't see that happening much in the world. Open source doesn't do that much. I'm not sure there's much code that gets removed from the Linux kernel. Correct me if I'm wrong.
You're asking the wrong guy. I've got better things to do with my Saturday than keep up with kernel development.
Well, right. But you're complaining about the kernel development, about all the stuff that goes in there, mm-hmm. and you really want something that's smaller and smaller and smaller. Mm. We're not seeing very much of that. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of a Windows OK or something that grandma can run that's just much smaller.
But we might. I mean, with this virtualized area,
I think it's promising.
I already know guys who load up VMware. They load mm-hmm. up their browsers in VMware so that they don't get pwned.
And yeah.
That seems to be working perfectly
fine.
It's
a great idea.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you can just back it off to the checkpoint, and it's as if nothing happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can take stuff out of the virtual environment and, you know, deliberately shunt it onto your normal file system mm-hmm. and then nuke away. You know? And you could be running a version, you know, you could be running the most insecure version of IE, and you got all your malware crawling around there. And unless it's going to break through the hypervisor, which is, it's too obscure a practice these days for the bad guys to be focusing on, you're pretty much 100% safe.
Right. So what we'd like to do is have grandma use that arrangement.
Yeah.
So it's widely deployed. Mm. And what will happen is then the bad guys will have to start attacking the hypervisor. They are very well funded. They are professionals. They are not script kiddies.
No. But then again, I mean, the problem doesn't seem to be with the hypervisor because the hypervisor is pretty thin. The problem seems to be with all the bloated crap that they put around the hypervisor to manage the interaction between your different virtual OSs.
Might be. Remember, the hardware operating system interface was never one where the hardware mistrusted the operating system very much. Mm. And that is the level you're drawing this line there at. So maybe it doesn't have quite the security properties you want. But I agree. I think this is an exciting area for research. I think I'm looking forward to it. When a lot of grandmas around the world are running this, I'll know we made a major step towards winning.
Yeah. I don't know if you've caught this. Actually, speaking of the hardware trusting the OS, we've got like kind of a problem in the reverse direction with the operating system trusting the hardware because I don't know if you've seen stuff floating around about how easily updatable and conveniently updatable the firmware on network interface cards is.
Yes,
have you caught this recently?
Yes, that's one of the sets of papers that is convincing me that all is lost.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Because this is the thing about sending those PCI.
Transfers.
PCI. Yeah. Yep, and basically, you can say to the NIC, "Hey, I am a new version of firmware that's really, really good.
Yeah.
Install me," and it says, "Okay."
Yeah.
Just does it. So, so all is lost. Great.
Okay. It's one of the places where all is lost. Another one is the all your iframes are belong to us paper, which is coming out. It's already a Google blog out there. This paper points out that even if you go to a righteous web page, that web page may go to an advertiser who's righteous, who may go to another advertiser who's righteous, who isn't, and you may, going to completely normal web pages, get screwed. Mm. And this is happening more and more.
What's happened to CNET, I think? CNET Asia got complete. They had some search engine optimization thing that was had cross-site scripting bugs so that you entered in a search with an iframe and then it cached it and then Google picked that up and then you search for something in Google and you wind up with the cached, eviled page and then you get pwned. And yeah, it's pretty bad.
It is.
But this NIC stuff, I mean, that's horrible.
Well, there's another paper that's coming out of University of Illinois investigating how many extra transistors do we have to add to a CPU to make it corruptible. Mm-hmm. And the answer is a very tiny amount. In their paper, they activate this. The activation is turning off permission checking in the hardware. Okay? That'd be a nice thing to do. How do you turn it off? You send a UDP packet with an incorrect checksum. The CPU reads this sequence of bytes, which is carefully set bits of state, and says, okay, I just saw the sequence of bytes. Now turn it off. Even though the checksum is bad, the packet is rejected, the CPU is now turned on to this promiscuous state.
Now, look, we haven't seen a lot in hardware hacking, and that kind of surprises me. I think it's coming. But one thing that absolutely fascinates me about this hardware stuff is that we've kind of worked out how to patch our software. You know what I mean? It's a grind. We shouldn't really be using that model, but we do.
Yeah.
How the hell do you patch all of your network cards in an organization of 30,000 desktops,
or
100,000 desktops.
Or all the network cards in all of your routers.
Yeah. This is a big problem.
Oh, yeah. Attacks against hardware concern me a lot,
yeah.
Especially since if you can damage the hardware, you can cause a supply problem.
Mm.
Okay, we know you need a new chip, but I'm sorry, so does everyone else.
But it's also the inventory issue, which is
exactly.
Like, how do I know who's running a Realtek chipset? How do I know who's running, you know, a Freecom chipset?
You can often tell that just by the Ethernet address, which, of course, we're putting in the IPv6 addresses.
Okay. So that's maybe we'll see some smart tools around able to develop some inventory around there. But, I mean, that's my immediate problem is I speak to some CSOs, and I'm like, well, say you had to go around and update the firmware on every single network interface card in your organization. What would you do? And they're pretty much like, well, I'd find a nice tall object, you know, take a drink, you know, have a smoke. Say goodbye to my wife, and then I'd jump.
The answer is you'd cancel vacations and deal with it.
Yeah.
And that's what
that's the other way. I mean, that might be the American way here. We'd just
well, maybe. You know, which was it? The blaster worm that came out in mid-August.
Mm.
That's when most U.S. IT folks are on vacation. It was a denial of vacation attack.
Yeah, well, I managed to perform one of those myself on Microsoft security team when a guy at the KiwiCon Hacker Conference dropped WPAD on them. And I was forced to report that. Thanksgiving, we don't have that here, so they weren't very happy with me when Thanksgiving happened to coincide with our production cycle. But there you go. Happy days.
Yes.
Happy days. Bill Cheswick, thank you very much. People should go and download your presentation on passwords, which is, of course, available at itradio.com.au/auscert08. But thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Glad to be here.